as a country, where do we end up putting ourselves on the international stage? Where do we fall when we have our allies and our enemies alike looking at Canada and saying, okay, this is our impression of Canada. Do they take us seriously? Do they see us as, you know, they're an easy target? And I'm talking about not just military. We know there's issues there that we've documented. But what about in terms of how we handle security in this country? Espionage. Are we targets that we've been identified as easy targets? I think so, right? You take a look at what's going on with the foreign interference inquiry and all kinds of evidence about, you know, involvement from foreign countries getting into our business and seemingly with impunity in a lot of cases. And then you got the Winnipeg lab breach, which is a big one that's been going on. There's all kinds of instances you can look at and say, are we doing a good enough job of protecting ourselves? We're going to speak now with Richard Shimuka, who actually put together a piece on this very subject for The Hub. You can also find it on the McDonald Laurier Institute website. He is a contributing writer at The Hub and a senior fellow with McDonald Laurier Institute. And he joins us now. Richard, thanks so much for being with us today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Your piece for The Hub deals, it talks about the Winnipeg lab controversy. Why? Why is that sort of the event that says, okay, we've got a problem here for you?
Well, I mean, this week, the Minister of Health, Mark Holland, basically said that part of the reason why this occurred was because we were lax and we didn't fully understand the threat in 2019 that was posed by China, which is, I think, is a pretty stunning admission by a senior cabinet member that we are not taking this, or we didn't take this seriously. And presumably he's trying to claim that, well, we're trying to do this now, but given how much of this issue has remained, they basically fought any sort of disclosure up until now, and it's only now that it's come out in full, or I should say in part, or a better understanding of it, I think that really gives a sense of maybe the lack of seriousness that we're taking some of these issues. And I think that's pretty shocking, because if you look down south, and part of the article I wrote really sort of highlighted what the United States has been dealing with and some of our allies with the very same issue of foreign interference and sort of espionage, they've taken it quite seriously. And similar sort of level events, or even lesser events, are exposed, and you know, the full weight of the law is basically brought on this, and you see real accountability with people who are involved, senior to the individuals that undertook the espionage.
Now, I mean, when we talk about espionage, that's a fact of life. I mean, if you're a country, and we are, there's going to be espionage. That's not what we're talking about here. It's how we respond, right? Because it takes place everywhere all the time.
So absolutely. Every day. I mean, every day our adversaries, and frankly, we do it as well. I mean, it's not like we're not doing it, but I mean, certainly our adversaries are trying to find every single advantage, because the reality of this, you know, era of great power competition, where you see, you know, Russia and China and other sort of lesser states trying to push the boundaries in order to sort of, you know, achieve more or meet their interests, they see this big part of this is, you know, the technological race, the sort of, you know, innovation and sort of trying to build their economies. And the easiest way to sort of get yourself ahead in some ways is just steal it, right? And this has happened for, you know, centuries, really.
But it's changed, though, right, Richard? Because like you say, now we're talking a lot about economics, and that's a lot of the espionage, those sorts of things. It used to be more military. We used to spy for different reasons, didn't we?
To some degree. I think that just the nature of how our innovation occurs really has changed, that it used to be, you know, I think back to the Second World War, early Cold War, much of the funding for technological innovation came from government. And that's really changed now, whereas you see big corporations like, let's say, like Google's or Facebook's or you know, SpaceX, right? They are some of the larger sort of funders of innovation and technology research, and so they're pushing there. Just last week, you had a Google engineer charged under Federal Trade Secrets Act because he stole AI data, I think, on cars, ostensibly for China, right? So you see, like, everywhere you go, you're seeing the exact sort of effort in order to sort of build ahead and try to gain a material advantage for your either your corporation or for your state.
You know, you're talking about the Winnipeg breach or the lab security leak, whatever you want to call it. One of the things that came out of that, and you mentioned it in the piece too, talking about the entire system, you know, these kind of things happen. The espionage takes place, it happens, but then our government sort of, I mean, it's been going on for years, Richard, 2-3 years now, trying to get to the bottom of this, and our government seems to actually be getting in the way. I mean, the way we handle this is probably the bigger concern, because like you say, espionage happens. It's how the government responds. Do we take it seriously?
No. And I think if you remember earlier this year, you had the CSIS leaks, or where I firmly believe that many people within our national security community are absolutely appalled at just how the lack of attention and accountability and care that's taken to this really serious issue. Whereas, like, and I didn't write this in the article, but if you think about the leak, the individual that leaked in the United States through Discord, all the data on Ukraine, yeah, and just to his buddies and all that, you had a huge, large number of people that were just summarily dismissed for what occurred. And that's not happened here.
Nope.
I mean, everything that's happened since has been trying to, you know, to diminish its impact or diminish the sort of the accountability. You had the government fight an act of parliament in order to get more of disclosure on this because they didn't want accountability. And I think that's pretty shocking. Not just the culture, and there's not an effort to actually root out the sort of the lackadaisical effort on this and so really put in more stringent security measures that would have, you know, would have maybe not prevented, but made this much harder, because again, you can't root it out, right?
No,
but it's the reality. The outcome is just not there. The effort hasn't been made, and the seriousness hasn't really been a part of, even now, to some degree.
And perhaps the most concerning part of this is, like you say, and the title of your piece, our enemies and our allies alike know that, right? There's a recognition. So what does that do for our reputation, or how we're seen in this context, in this particular situation, when we're talking about espionage and, you know, security breaches and all the rest? What's Canada positioning ourselves like on the global stage in this area?
Pretty poorly. I remember, yeah, after September 11th, you had a, I think it was Alan Rock and a bunch of other senior Liberal cabinet ministers made a real effort to ensure that our border security was considered high quality, right? That we were doing as much as we can to ensure that we were seen by the United States as being a good ally, that we understand your concerns, we're you know, taking them into account. And between this right now, between these the lab leaks, you look at our lacking defense spending, where it constantly at these meetings at NATO and whatnot, you have our allies saying, you aren't spending enough, and you need to do more, and we're just ignoring them, right?
Yeah.
All of these events have really soured, I think, our allies' view of us, which has taken literally decades to build up. I mean, you just had a story earlier on about the First World War soldier who was just identified. I mean, those men and later on women died in these conflicts in order to sort of, you know, for our national interest, and that's built part of the big reason why we have prosperity today in this country. And yet now we're just kind of frittering it away. And I'm not even sure why. Like, maybe sort of some small partisan political magic doesn't help the country itself.
No. It's a great question. And then the answer is, there's no upside to it. I think you're absolutely right. Are we serious about fixing this? We've got the Foreign Interference Inquiry and, you know, the Foreign Actors Registry. Do you think we've had a snapback to reality moment here and we're actually getting to work on this, Richard?
I think it depends who you ask or where, yeah, you ask. I think within the public, I think there's a better understanding. I think there was a bunch of polls that were put out recently that sort of suggested that most Canadians are really starting to understand that, you know, they see what's happening in Ukraine, you see what's happening elsewhere, that the situation is not, the international situation is not good, and Canada needs to play a bigger role. And our allies are verbally, you know, telling us we need to do this in the public sphere, right? But I think certain parts of our political community don't see this there. They still think, oh, well, China is not big of a threat, and we can play some sort of middle role when such middle role doesn't even exist. I mean, that may have been something that they could have said in parts of the Cold War, but even now, like that, it didn't exist really back then, and it certainly doesn't exist now when we're seen as basically the easy mark that we can maybe steal technology and sort of, you know, interfere and use as a sort of way to circumvent some of the stronger defenses that our other allies that are serious about it have put up.
Yeah, we can't deny it at this point, Richard. I mean, it's so well documented, specifically when we talk about China. I mean, clandestine police stations set up in our country. I mean, there's no doubt about the fact that they're operating all kinds of operations in Canada. There's no question.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and this is one of the best examples. I mean, they will look for every week. So why would you, if you need to get certain like cultures or whatever from certain sort of cultures, like say Ebola.
Yeah.
Why would you go to Fort Detrick in the United States, which is, you know, similar higher level lab in a lot of cases, and which has multiple levels of really strong security protocols, where you could just go to the Canadian lab and
we'll give you a job.
There you go. I mean, why would you, right? I mean, one of the things, the big questions I have, and I'm not too sure about this, is that I don't know if the individual was a foreign issues a permanent resident.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or is she a citizen? Because if she's a citizen, like in the United States, you could not work in that facility, in their similar facilities, without being a citizen.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't be able to get through the security screen. And this isn't like a, I'm not like, this is looking at the security pieces of point of case, they're far more stringent in the United States than our other allies in order to ensure that what are really, really dangerous, you know, cultures or you know, potential threats are kept safe. And in this case, it just does not seem that it was.
No, it definitely wasn't. You're absolutely right. Richard, it's alarming, it's troubling, but it's very, very true. I really appreciate your time joining us today and walking us through it.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks so much.